Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sander Lanch podcast. Today, we are discussing, this is our penultimate episode. In our, I like to throw that out there. People may have noticed I like the word penultimate. This is our penultimate episode in our coverage of The Way of Kings by Brandon Sanderson. We're going to be talking about chapters 69, 70, and 71 today, wherein we finally get that Navani perspective that everyone's been waiting for since the beginning of part four. And it's a pretty interesting stuff with Navani wanting justice, Kaladin and Dalinar returning. After that, we go back to Shallan for the beginning of chapter five, which I think you guys predicted last time. And we finish up this week's episode with a Seth chapter, which everyone is always out for more Seth. So lots of pretty crazy stuff revealed, lots of crazy stuff happening in these three chapters. I'm Data. And with me today is
Jamie,
Jack,
and Joe.
Let's do this. Hang on to something, everybody. The Sander Lanch is about to begin.
I looked it up before you were while you were talking. The word for before penultimate is antepenultimate.
Ooh. Interesting.
Yeah.
I like that one, too. So yeah, three chapters and three, I feel like, rather eventful chapters. What did you guys think of these three chapters?
Oh man, there was a lot going on. Yeah, a lot going on. I'm glad we got a Navani perspective. I listened to the audiobook for these chapters and it was sort of jarring to all of a sudden jump to a Dalinar perspective, like fairly early on in the chapter, but no, it was good. I think they handled it pretty well of, you know, how to sort of play Sadeus coming back, being all like, he's dead. And then as soon as he said something about his armor being pulled apart and everything, I was like, you idiot. You don't say things you can't back up, because now he's going to come back with his armor on. And clearly it was not pulled apart. And therefore you did not see that. Ugh, what a he's just slime, that guy. I knew we never liked him. I didn't see him giving up a shard blade. Sorry, Dalinar giving up his shard blade. That was kind of impressive, but he's got a pretty big plan up his sleeve now. Did he need to beat up Elikar? Probably not, but I guess he got his point across. Yeah, it was a lot to take in very quickly. The chapter with Shallan, I thought, was quite good. I wasn't sure whether we were going to just pick up exactly where we left off with her, and it turns out we did, so it's kind of nice that not a lot's changed there, but I guess our timeline might have been a little out of whack, I guess, because, yeah, obviously more time has passed with Dalinar and Kaladin. I'm happy for Kaladin and all of the Bridgemen. Just, sorry, jumping back another chapter. At least they can have a better life now, which is awesome. Yeah. Yasna and Shallan being able to soul cast without a soul caster. The fact that Shallan killed her father, whoa, that just kind of came out of nowhere. I didn't expect that. And King Taravangian, what? Didn't expect that either. He's so kind. Not. yeah, it's all coming out. And obviously we're very, very in Sander Lanch territory, but there's things here that I'm like, man, I actually have no idea we could have predicted that. Just completely sideswiped.
It's fair that it would have been tough to predict a lot of those things. Like, Shallan killed her father. We knew he was dead and that, you know, some bad stuff went down. But that's a surprise.
So she's hiding from the world that he's dead, but then hiding from her brothers that she actually killed him. Unless they know. Maybe they know. I don't know. But
Who knows at this point?
Who knows?
And her being, them both being able to soul cast is the one thing that I feel like there were a decent number of hints about. And I kind of tried to steer you guys a little bit in that direction when we got there. And it's just like, man, she wasn't even touching that soul caster when she soul cast. Huh? We've never seen anyone be able to do that.
Mm.
But yeah, lots being revealed. It was a very busy part, the beginning of part five, the first two chapters of part five. She's like, here, let's reveal a bunch of stuff to you. So kind of throwing a lot at you guys.
Yeah, I think the most shocking out of all of that was the king being Seth's master and just actually being an all-around horrible individual.
Yeah. And we kept talking about, like, man, what if Taravangian's on the list that Seth has? And then it turns out he is. But
because he put himself there.
Yeah. So did you think when we saw at the beginning of that chapter that Seth was, like, Taravangian's name is on the list and Seth has showed up? Do you think that Taravangian was going to die here at the end?
Well, he was the last name. I think it was when he was like, this one's got to be done quietly. I was like, that doesn't seem like everyone else on the list. That's a bit weird. Yeah. Something's going to happen here or we're going to see something. But I didn't think it was like he was behind it.
That's a good point that's your tip off that something weird may be about to happen. Yeah. Okay. Fair.
Yep. Everyone say it with me now. Taravangian, secret bad guy.
Yep.
Yep. There's not always, but often one. Yeah, no, 100%. As soon as the instructions said, oh, this one's got to be done quietly. I'm like, after all that song and dance that his master made about, you know, you do this loudly and like, you know, what you do is a work of art. No way. There's like something is very wrong with this. So like that had my hackles up, but I could not have predicted the extent. Agreed. Taravangian was like the nicest dude. He was the closest thing we had to an Uncle Iroh. And then it turns out he's
too nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Too nice by half. So I guess all the epigraphs of people dying are things that he is recording. Is that the implication there?
I think that is the implication, yeah.
Right, okay. So that's a whole lot of stuff to take in. Cast all those in an entirely new light. Because we have speculated before. It's like, who is recording these?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. We got an answer to that. But let's go back. So, yeah, like, Navani going to Sadeus and talking down to him was pretty cool. Like, the glyph on the floor, I'm just like, maybe I'm just an idiot. I didn't quite get what that was supposed to accomplish, unless it was just like a public admonition of like, this guy is lying, which was then made like very obvious to Navani and Sadeus when Dalinar showed back up and said, he's like, okay, I might have said too much there. But, you know, he talks to Dalinar and he covers his ass pretty well. And Dalinar's like, you got it this time. But I got to say, I didn't see it coming. But I fucking loved Dalinar giving up the shard blade to save the Bridgeman. That's one of those moments. That's like in Age of Ultron, where like after everyone's made so much of a big deal about being able to raise Thor's hammer and no one else has been confirmed to be able to do it, Captain America. Then at the end of the movie, they're just like, can we trust Vision? Can we not trust Vision? And he just hands Thor the hammer, and everyone's like, yes, we can. Like, this is one of those, like, Kaladin got into this whole mess because he refused a shard blade, and now he's getting out of it because someone else is refusing a shard blade. Like, mm-hmm. That'll just instantly vet Dalinar that Kaladin will see, all right, this guy is worth the stories. He's done something no other High Prince would conceive of doing to save us. He is worth our loyalty. It is, yeah, it's just like the biggest. It's just a single act that just instantly proves this guy is exactly what people say he is. So I think that's going to go a long way for Kaladin in future and working with Dalinar. So yeah, love that. Elikar, I've got some quickie notes I just typed up as we were setting things up, and I've just got Elikar equals massive dunderhead. I need to prove that the assassination attempts are serious, so I'm going to fake one. You fucking moron. Like, and the bollocksing he gets from Dalinar, I was the whole time, I'm just like, yes, Dalinar, fucking keep going, you absolute twit. Yeah, so, like, I get Elikar is scared, but my God, that was just one of the dumbest things he could have done. I couldn't believe when I read that. I'm still in disbelief. Let's not belabor that point. Moving on. Yeah, Shallan, I also thought that, oh, we picked up right where we left her off. So I was like, what's the go with the timeline here? Is this, are we jumping back a little bit, or has she just been in the hospital for a few weeks? Or like, no, she can't have been. Like Yasna said, the boat was coming to pick her up pretty much the next day or something. So yeah, I think we must be just be skipping around a bit. I'm not entirely certain when, but I can see why from a thematic point of view, from storytelling, it's like, it might be anticlimactic to have her stuff come well before everything else. So that's okay. Mm-hmm. I did like have that, the penny dropped when she was just like, but Yasna ate the bread. And I'm like, we brought that up back when, like, we were just like, wait, how did she eat the bread and didn't get poisoned? So, and we never picked up on that possibility, or at least I didn't. So that was cool to get confirmation and that be the tip off. Yeah. Again, she killed her dad. Holy shit. What the fuck? Want to know more about that? And then, yeah, so confirmation that the place that they go to is Shadesmar, which I believe is the cognitive realm. I believe it's been referred to as that. So, yeah, just all kind of crazy truth bombs being dropped on us this week. It's a whole lot. You can tell I've rambled for a very long time.
There's so much to deal with. I like your point about like the parallels between Kaladin. All this started over a shard blade, and now it's kind of ending over a different shard blade. And I agree with you that it's like, this is maybe the only way Kaladin would trust Dalinar, because this is a Dalinar going a very long way to prove himself. And he says, you know, it's for my honor, basically. But
yeah,
seeing someone who's actually honorable as opposed to pretending to be is a big deal for him.
Yeah.
And Taravangian is a lot of people, like in a recent episode, you, Dak, were like, oh yeah, Taravangian's like this nice old guy. And a bunch of people on the Discord are like, oh man, he's going to be so unhappy when you find out the truth about Taravangian.
Yeah, well, you know what, listeners? You are fucking right. I was crushed. I'm like, can we not have like a genuinely nice dude who isn't military?
This is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah.
And the revelation that like he's or his people are the source of all of these quotes you pointed out, it's that really recontextualizes a lot of stuff. Like the one where the Shin guy is like, I know now why you do what you do. I will not speak of the things that I see.
I'm still not going to tell you. Fuck you. I'm like, okay, that's an odd one. So yeah, it's like, oh man, now we need to go back and just read a list of all of them. Just like, what other hints were in there?
And we had the discussion about like, who could be recording these things? Who would be around this many people who are dying? And I kind of dropped maybe the tiniest hint where I was just like, yeah, I mean, like, who could that be? Maybe soldiers or a doctor, like Kaladin's dad or something like that. And yeah. See if anyone would pick up on it.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing that threw me was that I never once considered for a second that they were all in the same place, because I think I got stuck on thinking it was the symbol-headed people, because the fact that there were so many different nationalities all over the place, I never suspected that all these quotes were coming from some people in the same location. I thought it was just coming from all over the continent. So
yeah.
And so that it just never tweaked to me that they might all be together and someone is like set this up. Because
and they even,
why the fuck would you set this up?
They even like address that concern where we found out in earlier chapters, like people from all over the world come here because you can come here and get treated with no charge or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so
it's the sort of thing that makes me think it may not necessarily have been hinted at, but the pieces were all in place that you go, what the fuck? And then you look back and you say, okay, it does make sense in context. Whether or not you can count it as a hint that this is happening, I don't know if you can go that far, but it's definitely cohesive.
It's one of those things that Brandon's really good at, is when the twists come, you're like, what the hell? And then you look back at it and you're like, all the little pieces were there. And yeah, okay.
Say all of them.
Well, enough little pieces.
Enough of them.
Yeah. So, yeah. Lots of And just imagine, this is the beginning of part five here. What's going to happen in the last, how many more chapters do we have in part five? Let's see. There's 1, 2, 3, 4 chapters and an epilogue left. So.
I have thoughts, but I'll save them for predictions.
That's probably a good place to put them, yeah.
Man, what a group of chapters here. So many things revealed. So much fun stuff to read. I mean, I can partially echo what Dak and Jamie have said. There was a lot of really cool moments, the way that Dalinar handled Sidaeus. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, Jamie, when Sidaeus said, I saw his body pulled apart. Like, you're an idiot. Why would you say that? You didn't see that. Like, it just classic over, not compensating, but like, just obviously not a good way to go, dude. Don't say you saw something you didn't say. All you got to say is, well, he was surrounded by Parshendi. We couldn't get to him. I had to think of my own troops, so unfortunately I had to leave him behind. That's all you got to say, right? And so we have that piece. The way Dalinar dealt with it was a little surprising, I have to say. Him giving up the shard blade, I did not see coming. My mouth didn't hit the floor or anything, but I'm like, oh, that's how he does it. Because he's, you know, he's like offering him, like, I'll give you 20 emerald brums for each of them. And they're like, everybody gasps, like, he's like, no, not even for 1,000 each. He's like, well, how about my sword then?
Sidaeus really wants to kill these guys now. So.
Yeah, he wants to kill them real bad. So, yeah. I mean, we got to where a lot of us were predicting with that piece of the story, maybe not in the way we expected. And so that was fun. That was interesting. Interesting also that he's going to give his armor to his other son. I guess he's basically just decided, like, if I'm going to be the High Prince of War, I don't need to be on the front lines. I'm going to be directing all the stuff, so I don't need the armor. I mean, that would be my guess. Yeah. But it is an interesting choice to be like, yeah, I don't need the blade and I don't need this either. So see ya. The funny thing to me is, like, I mean, I'm sure this would cause, knowing Sidaeus, like, this isn't going to happen. It would cause a war, I'm sure. But the funny thing is, as High Prince of War, he could probably be like, oh yeah, give me that shard blade back. I'm the High Prince of War. But I, you know, Sidaeus is going to be like, yeah, sure. He's going to be like, oh no, we'll just go to war then. And so we've got that, that whole section wrapped up very interestingly. I feel like we got kind of done the Navani perspective, because it was really only Navani for like maybe a couple pages, and then we moved on to a different perspective. And then moving over to Shallan, yeah, I didn't expect us to pick right back up where we left off. And you know, we had mentioned before, like, that's weird. It makes a point of it in here how she doesn't have the Fabriel, but obviously what she just did was soul cast. And I think maybe I theorized, or somebody theorized, that it just has to be in close proximity. But like, I don't know. That's interesting that they would use the. I mean, and maybe, and Yasna obviously didn't come up with it, because there have been soul casters before Yasna. But like, that the soul casters, you know, whoever those folks may be, made the decision to basically be like, yeah, we're gonna make it look like we all use this device, but we don't actually use this device. We just know how to do it. That's an interesting kind of like ploy on the part of people that can soul cast. And I wonder, like, who came up with that idea? Like, let's hide.
Oh, so you think it's like everybody that can soul cast that does this?
Oh yeah, I wouldn't imagine, because I mean, based on the magic system that we see here, soul casting seems to me to be an extension of using Stormlight in some way, because they're using up gems in the Fabriel. So it's like, you don't have to have the gems in the Fabriel. You just have to have the gems and draw on the Stormlight. Like, that would be that, based on everything we've read so far, that makes the most sense to me, because they still need a source for the power that they're using. Just like when Kaladin uses Stormlight, or just like the Stormlight powers up the armor and all that stuff. Like, you still have to have a source for that stuff. So the Fabriel is just like a handy glove that is a source for it, but it doesn't actually make it work. And if the interesting thing to me also is, like, if her father really could soul cast, then we kind of thought maybe that dude that helped her out, the priest guy or whoever, was lying. But like, if he really knew how soul casting worked, he would obviously think, oh yeah, this is broken. Like, but obviously it wouldn't be broken. He would know that. if he knew how soul casting worked. So I was like, yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense for him to say it's broken. Mm. That guy obviously knew it wasn't broken if he knew what soul casting actually worked. Maybe he didn't, but I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, because then what's his motivation to lie, or did right. he just not know? Yeah,
exactly. So there's got to be either a motivational lie, like you said, or he just doesn't know. And so obviously we're going to be very interested to see how all that shakes out. Yasna's agreed to take her on as like an official ward now, which honestly, like, as her ward, I often wondered, like, she was just going to keep doing all this heavy research and never include Shallan in it, or like, what, I guess, like, I wonder what Yasna's original goal for Shallan was, because it seemed like they were growing kind of close. So like, it's just like weird. And then we've got Seth, and we felt kind of bad for Seth all this time, but now I just feel extra bad. He like killed all these people, and then he's like, we find out Taravangian's evil, which, whoa, big twist. I don't think any of us predicted that, could have even came close to predicting that. So like, as much as we predict on this show, there's a lot of stuff that we just like still don't get, and we're like, oh, I didn't see that coming. So that's kind of cool that none of us really saw that one coming. And then, poor Seth. I mean, now he's going to have to go kill Dalinar Colan. Like, what's going to happen? Is Seth going to collide with the Shattered Plains in this book? Or are we saving that for that mission for next book? Like, what's the deal? So it'll be interesting to see what happens for sure. But yeah, super fun chapters. I'm looking forward to finishing the book and then giving my just like I do every book, giving kind of what my review of where I think this places as far as the stuff we've read and the book in its own right. So yeah, excited to read the rest.
Yeah, you're the first one to mention, but he's off to try to kill Dalinar. That's going to be a thing. Like,
yeah, yeah. And also, like, I know we could get into this more in the episode, but what does Taravangian know? Like, how does yeah. Taravangian already know Dalinar Colan's taking, like, not control of the, well, I mean, I guess he is taking control of the war, but like, that he's taking control of the Alethi kingdom through Elhokar? Does he know that already? And if so, how does he know? Like, mm-hmm. Where's his information coming from that he knows Dalinar is close to uniting them? Like, where is this information coming from, given that they are all the way across, like, the world from each other pretty much? And so my thoughts is, well, maybe it's the dying, like, maybe this guy has listened to or read enough of these like dying words that he's kind of, even the ones that are like a prophetic sounding and like don't sound like specific things, he's found a way to like kind of divine their meaning. And maybe, I mean, because from what it sounds like, is like these things are telling the future, which is against their religion anyway. So like, maybe Taravangian's the ultimate like heathen, like trying to predict the future with these people's dying words.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, it could be like religion could really play into it. And actually, it kind of, let's see if I can find it, it gives different, that idea gives different perspective to there it is. So back in an earlier chapter, Taravangian is talking about to Yasna about, he asks her about her soul caster, and she tells him like, I'm not gonna tell you about that. And he says that, the Ardents are upset about this. I've already acquired some new enemies by welcoming you here. And she says, you'll be forgiven depending on the devotee you've chosen. And he says, forgiven me? And it says, he seemed to find that amusing. And for a moment, Shallan thought she saw deep regret in his expression. He says, unlikely, but that's something else entirely. And then he moves on. So, he doesn't seem to think that he's going to find forgiveness in religion. And maybe that could be a thing, because he's going flagrantly against the religion, not just in killing a bunch of people, but in trying to predict the future.
Yeah. So, yeah, we get a subtle hint there that we overlooked, basically saying like, yeah, I'm not a good dude.
Yeah, I guess that was kind of a hint that he wasn't a good guy. I didn't think about it that way, but that's a fair point. But we've back to Seth. We've never seen Seth have to go up against another one of our main characters. So now does it come to like, is one of them going to die in a confrontation that you guys have been predicting Dalinar was going to die for a while now? I guess Dak's prediction could still come true. Moash could kill Dalinar before the end of this book, but he's looking in pretty good shape after what happened on the plateaus. Unless Seth shows up. I don't know. Okay, how about random quick prediction at the beginning of the episode? If Seth and Dalinar fights, who wins that fight, everybody?
I have a whole big prediction about that. Okay. So I'm going to save that all for the end of the episode. But yeah, I have thoughts.
Fair.
I also have a predicament about that.
Okay.
Do you also
have a predicament about that that you want to save for the end?
Way to mess this up, Data.
No, I feel like it could go either way, honestly. If Dalinar still had his blade, maybe Dalinar, but I don't know. I think that there's... I don't know. That's really, really hard to tell. I think Dalinar's story's got so much further still to go, so I would hope it would be Dalinar. But you're right, we've been positing from the start of the book he's not going to make it out. So maybe that's just the next book. You know, Seth won't actually get to Dalinar this book. There's really not that long to go for that to actually happen. And I think if Seth managed to get to Dalinar and kill Dalinar by the end of this book, I'd be disappointed.
Yeah, it would almost be anticlimactic for it to happen so quickly. Yeah, I agree. Okay, fair enough. Well, then let's move into these. Actually, before we move into the chapters, one note that I got sent that I wanted to let you guys know about. We've talked about not knowing if Sadeas has a wife. His wife has been mentioned one time in this book. It was just at a moment where we were concerned with lots of other things, and we didn't pay much attention to it. You may remember the chapter Gibbletish, where Wit, you know, talks to Dalinar, and then Dalinar and confronts Sadeas to be like, hey, what did you find with the investigation?
Yeah, there was a lot going on that chapter.
There was. And in the middle of that whole thing, there's one sentence where it's like Sadeas's wife had joined them. Eli, Iallai, was a curvaceous woman who reportedly dyed her hair. And that's all the information we get about her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for sorry, such important.
I just forgot that someone could love Sadeas.
Fair. Yep. I don't know. We were starting to come around on him a little bit. Like maybe he's not so bad. And then, you know, these things happened.
No, we should trust our instincts.
I don't know, I'm starting to think of Sadeas as more of like a Sinestro type of character. Like he's a villain because he's against our heroes, but I think he genuinely does believe he's doing the right thing.
Yeah, lots of villains do though.
Yeah, true.
You guys, like Jamie missed the last episode, but you guys were pretty harsh on Sadeas, but also just like, I don't understand why he's, I hope there's some explanation for why he would do this. And then we get an explanation. So I can see that kind of tempered it where you're like, oh, maybe he actually, you know, believes this, that this is what's for the best. And getting a little whiplash on you.
Yeah.
Brandon's jerking us around on our opinions of Sadeas.
I still hate his guts.
Yeah. His reasoning, while a reason, wasn't, I mean, it's pretty crappy anyway. It's like, well, I know you're my old friend, but like, I think the kingdom would benefit from your death. So that's what I wanted to do, was make sure to just get you out of the picture. And like, obviously, I think like the thing that you mark Sadeas and you could tell, yeah, this guy's not a good dude, is the way he treats the Bridgemen, especially when the Bridgemen try to find a way to survive. And he's like, oh, now I'm extra mad at them. And then he's obviously a greedy person because he's the one who tries to win the most gem hearts. As soon as Dalinar offers up that sword, there's like a moment of hesitation, but he's like, no, screw it. That's mine. That's what I want.
Yeah,
like,
that's fair.
Yeah.
So he's not a good dude. Like, let's be very clear on that. Like, this dude, even if he's in his brain, his reasoning is sound, he's not a good dude.
Yeah, when the chips sit down, he's in it for himself.
How much would you have to really want to kill Kaladin to give up the shard blade and be like, nah, I'd rather kill him than take that?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be in that position to begin with because I'm not the asshole that Sadeas is. Like, I wouldn't be in a position where I'm like, that guy wants to survive? Man, he needs to die real bad. But I was going to murder my best friend and he stopped it? No, I want to kill him. Like, that, I would never be in that situation.
But also, I just want to point out, it's not just Kaladin. Dalinar doesn't just take Bridge 4. He takes every single Bridgeman in Sadeas' army. So it's going to take Sadeas, you know, a few days, a week at the most, to get back enough army of Bridgemen in order to actually do a bridge run.
That's true. It's going to pause him for a minute.
Yeah, well, Dalinar's got other plans anyway. He doesn't need Sadeas to do bridge runs.
Mm. Oh, no, but I'm thinking from Sadeas' perspective. Like, Sadeas' whole thing is he wants to keep doing bridge runs. He wants the gem hearts, and he's, you know, doing it for the war effort or whatever the hell, whatever he's convinced himself. And now, at least for a little while, he can't do any because he has to rebuild his bridge crews from scratch.
That's true. Although we know that he, like, they died really fast. Kaladin had said, like, over a two-week period, basically, the entire bridge crew was recycled in a lot of cases because they die so quickly. So he's got a pipeline to lots of people, but I agree it would take a little while to refill them all.
Yeah. Plus, you know, he doesn't have, like, the Gaz or whoever to, like, you know, all right, this is what you do, go do it. Because, I mean, we still don't know what the hell happened to Gaz. I'm not worried, but I do want an answer.
It's true. We don't know where Gaz is. And you got to figure Matal is probably going to get executed now, so...
Yeah, probably.
It's like, he allowed Bridge 4 to stay behind when he should not have, and yeah, it's not going to work out for him, probably.
he will not be missed.
No. It's his wife. I wonder if she'll get executed, too. Okay, let's do these chapters. Chapter 69, Justice. And the epigraph is, all is withdrawn from me. I stand against the one who saved my life. I protect the one who killed my promises. I raise my hand. The storm responds. All right. Very dramatic. Doesn't sound like whoever it is having a great time. So
with my last breath, I curse Zoidberg.
Zoidberg. Yep. Which it's the Zoidberg hate, like, ramps up on that show quickly. At some point, it's just like, first it's just Hermes that hates Zoidberg, and then it's kind of everyone. But it's just funny because we're told multiple times that, like, Farnsworth is like, Zoidberg's like his oldest friend or something.
Yeah.
That's why he's and here.
It just sort of depends on the episode. And it's like, like a lot of comedy shows are like that. So it works.
That's true. We start with Navani, and I'm sure everyone was like, finally, we got that Navani perspective we were promised. And she's shoving her way into Sadeas's camp, where she notes quickly that this does not look like an army this barely looks like an army that has seen battle. Definitely not an army that suffered a horrible defeat like a couple hours ago. Sadeas's shard plate is unmarred, and the troops are being dismissed by groups. And she kind of storms her way in and then has to wait while someone goes up to tell Sadeas, like, oh, hey, by the way, the king's mom is here to talk to you. And she considers just, like, throwing a fit and making a scene. And Renarin shows up, too. And neither of them is sure what's gone on. They've heard rumors since Sadeas' army came back alone. Although there hasn't been much time for the rumors to spread. It's just, you know. And Sadeas is like, we'll see them. And he tells her, you know, I'm sorry to bring you the news like this. I express my condolences at the loss of your brother. Which, that's one way to tell her. All right. And I love that she's just like, you will explain. And he has this whole story about, you know, the Barshendi just brought every soldier they had to this battle and they surrounded us. And she's like, and so you left it. Note that he says they surrounded us, but he got away perfectly fine.
Yeah, they surrounded us. But, with my quick maneuvering, I was able to get out of the way.
We fought hard to reach Dalinar, but we had to retreat.
Yeah, I threw wave after wave of my own men at them.
And he's like, I would have kept fighting, but I mean, I saw them kill your brother with my own eyes, and they swarmed him, carrying away chunks of bloodied shard plate.
There's overselling it, and then there's this.
it's one of those things where liars put in too many details. And Navani is just like, oh, not again. After finally making that stone-headed man see her as a woman. And Sadeas goes on like a patriotic rant about how he's going to make them pay for this. We didn't always see the same sunrise, Dalinar and I, but he was an ally and a friend. I will make sure that they pay. And then she realizes Renarin is high prince now, and she's like, oh, geez. No, that's only if Dalinar's dead. And of course he's not dead. And she notes that Sadeas had all the bridges, and she looks down at where the bridges are, and she's just like, huh. And then she demands her brush pen and her burn ink. And she starts drawing on the ground in red ink. And so we've touched on it a couple of times in the book, but I don't know how clear y'all are and how the glyph, these glyph prayers work. But usually what happens is they draw the glyph on a piece of paper and then they burn it to send the prayer to God or whatever. And so she is creating a prayer here in that same way, but instead of putting it on paper and burning the paper, she has this ink that is designed to burn itself so that you can paint these prayers on whatever. And so she draws an enormous one on the ground, crying while she does it. And everyone's gathered around to watch like this. She goes through like several jars of ink painting this giant glyph. And then she sets it on fire with a candle when she's done. And it kills the prayer, sending its soul to the Almighty. You gotta love that this society is so martial that they even kill their prayers. It's not just burning it, it's killing it.
Yeah.
It was one single character, but a complex one. Thath Justice. And everyone just like is quietly watching for a moment. And then after the prayer, the burning stops, someone's like, Bright Lord Sadeus. And they turn around and here comes another army led by a mounted man in slate gray armor. And yet that's the end of our Navani section. She had, I don't know, that's like it was like 10 pages or so, at least in my Kindle version. And Dalinar, who started this day with 8,000 men, has 2,653 men left. So that's a lot of dead guys. And I love the note that he left Heck Gauntlet behind, but he borrowed one from Adolin, so he has a full suit of armor again. And we answer a question that some of you guys had last time about how exactly does this work when he's lost like his entire headpiece and then later his gauntlet. Apparently, you feed it Stormlight and it regrows the missing pieces. It even hints that if you don't do that, the Parshendi could take the gauntlet and regrow a whole suit from that. If the original suit didn't regrow its own gauntlet.
Just like a crab.
Crab armor. Yep.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Everything's coming up crab.
It always comes back.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have to start a new series called Crab Hunters.
Oh, shit.
Crab people. Yeah. And they've even managed to repair his armor some on their way in by borrowing all the infused gemstones in the army. So it can heal up. At least somewhat pretty quick in just the time it took them to march back across the plains. But he wants to be fully armored when he goes to confront Sadeus. I mean, he doesn't have a helmet or whatever, but other than that, he has some guy take the wounded back to his camp, but he takes the rest of the army with him to go see Sadeus, including he tells Kaladin, you guys should go to my camp too. I'll buy your freedom while I'm talking to Sadeus. And Kaladin's like, nah, I'm staying. And soon enough, all of Bridgeforth's like, oh yeah, we're staying too. And Dalinar's like, well, I mean, if they want to stay, whatever. I don't care that much. And he notes that Renarin and Navani are here. What are they doing here? I'm glad to see him anyway.
Yep, they're here. Good to see them.
And he notes that, like, for once, he can see some emotion on Renarin's face. The boy was displaying outright joy. He says, Father, you live. Renarin did not want to be High Prince either.
I'm also sure he's glad that his dad and brother are alive.
His dad is not dead. Yeah. And brother. Good point.
It's not just because he didn't want to be High Prince.
And Dalinar comes up and he like hugs Navani. And she's like, oh, geez, you really miss me, huh? People are going to talk. And he's like, I don't care. And he tells her he had kind of a realization while he was out there on the battlefield. Like, he realized he was going to die. And he really only had the two regrets, her and Renarin. And so he's like, this is going to change how I handle these things. And he hints here about something we're going to see later in this chapter, where he's like, something about that vision with Noadon, there's a lesson there that I need to learn, but I haven't quite grasped it yet. And he'll have come full circle by the time we see him with Elokar and figured out what that lesson is. But he's still determined that there's not going to be a fight here. This is not going to come to bloodshed. He can't destroy the kingdom by getting in a fight with Sadeus and starting a war. And he tells Adolin, don't summon your shard blade. We're not going to fight. Just, you know, hang out. And Sadeus is just like, Dalinar, old friend, it appears I overestimated the odds against you. I apologize for retreating while you're still in danger, but the safety of my men came first. I'm sure you understand. He's just no shame at all. And Dalinar's like, yeah, Yeah, you did what you had to do. But what he really wants to know, Dalinar gets close and he's like, I want to know why. Just like Dak and Joe last time, we're like, why would he do this? We want to know. We hope there's an explanation, not just Sadeas is mustache twirlingly evil.
Can we just go back a bit? Like when Dalinar says you did what you had to do, and like you could see Sadeas just go, oh, thank God.
He's not going to kill me.
Because he knows that like if Dalinar wanted to at this point, Dalinar would kill him.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sadeas' whole army being here could probably take down Dalinar eventually, but not before he killed Sadeas.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yep. And Sadeas says that he did this to fulfill his oath, to protect Elikar and this kingdom. He's basically like, look, dude, you're going crazy. And Gavilar had the same shit going on. He started to act all crazy at the end, and you're doing the exact same thing he did. And in order to protect the kingdom and protect Elikar from you and your insanity, I did what I had to do. And we find out like stuff that we haven't seen of Elikar. He's like, you're beginning to infect Elikar. He dresses like you. He talks of the codes and how we should enforce them through all the war camps. It's like, oh, so his uncle actually is having more of an influence on him than maybe we realized. And he tells Dalinar, you're going crazy. And what I did was a mercy to you, to let you die gloriously. And really, if you'd let me kill you, that might have finally united the kingdom as we like went to avenge you. So really, you screwed up here. You should have just died, my man.
Ways to make him feel bad about not dying. Like, what is wrong with this guy? If you had just died, maybe this would be better. Did you think about that? No, don't try and kill people. Or if you're going to kill people, make sure they die.
That's fair. Yeah, don't try to kill people. But if you are going to, just do it right.
Don't take my advice generally for life, specifically towards Sadeas.
The Sandlanch podcast does not advocate the cool crime of murder.
No.
Well, I mean, that was the first half of the advice was don't kill people. So
yeah, yeah.
Correct.
But yeah, if you're going to do it right. I mean, yeah. No. Don't murder. And then he brings up another thing that we brought up last time. It's like, why not just say that he was guilty of trying to kill the king when you investigated the crime or the assassination attempt? And I love Sadeas's response is something I think maybe we hadn't considered, where he's like, no one would have believed that. Everyone knows that, like, you wouldn't do something underhanded like that. Like, they would have talked about it, but nobody would have seriously believed. And it really just would have undercut me to have accused you, like, to be so clearly wrong publicly. Also, he's like, I think Elokar knows who tried to kill him. He basically admitted that much to me, which I don't know what you guys were thinking at this point before we find out that, yes, he knows because it was him.
I had no fucking clue. I'm just like, what? What the hell is wrong with the king?
But it makes sense. The only reason he would not tell Sadeas who he thought it was, because he trusts him as High Prince of Information, is if he did it himself. That makes sense.
Yep, 100%.
I wonder if that's like Dalinar's aha moment when he says that. He's like, he did it, didn't he?
Maybe. Oh, it's got to be.
And we end the conversation with Dalinar being like, well, you showed me something. Just by the act of trying to remove me, you've shown me that I'm still a threat. So then we cut to Kaladin, who's watching all this go down. And he looks over and Matal is standing in the crowd staring at him red-faced. And he's just like... Yeah, he's probably.
He's like, oh, yeah, shit, that guy. I forgot all about him.
And I love the moment where
Where's your wife?
Where's your wife now?
Yeah. I always thought she was kind of hot in like a scary way.
I love the moment where Kaladin thinks they should have killed me at the start. And then he goes, he thinks, well, they tried. They failed.
Yeah, I'm Kaladin. Kaladin Stormblessed.
And he's like, I don't know what happened out there with Syl and the words and all that stuff, but he can now like use Stormlight better than before. It's more powerful, so I guess that's good. And he watches as like the High Princes break off their quiet little talk, and Sadeas is like, oh, well, I guess, you know, this alliance is not going to work out. And Dalinar's like, yeah, no shit. But I'm going to go ahead and take these bridgemen with me. And Sadeas is like, no, you're not. And he's like, I mean, they can't be worth that much. I'll give you 60 emerald bromes per man, which we're told is easily 20 times the price of a good slave. And Thaddeus is like, oh no, not for 1,000 each. Take your soldiers and go leave my property. And Kaladin can just see in his eyes, like, the Bridgemen are gonna die. And Downer's like, says, don't press me on this. And Thaddeus is like, don't press you, excuse me? You leave, and if you try to take my property, I will attack you. And I will be justified in doing so. And Kaladin thinks Donar looks confident, but he just assumes that this is the end. Like, another promise dies. Dalinar's the same as all the others. And he turns, and then everyone gasps, and he looks back, and Dalinar has summoned his shard blade, and he shoves it right into that glyph on the stone, and he says, for the Bridgemen, I'm going to give you my blade in exchange for all of your Bridgemen. They become mine, and you will never bother them again. And Adolin's like, no! What? And Thaddeus, like, he hesitates, like I think Joe mentioned briefly, like, oh, I really want to kill those guys, though, before he goes, fine, take them.
Sweet revenge.
He even looks at Kaladin for a second. He's like, oh, man, I really want to fucking kill that guy.
Yep.
Yeah, that guy's my number one on my shit list. I'm going to kill the shit out of him. But I guess not.
By taking the blade, not only does he sell all the slaves, but he actually, Dalinar put in there, he has to agree not to bother them again, not to touch them in any way.
Yeah, that is the agreement.
Yeah, whether Thaddeus will live up to it, who knows, but
I mean,
he's getting a good deal from his perspective. So.
Oh, yeah. Like, publicly, he will live up to it, whatever he does in the shadows.
Yeah, like that movie and show, What We Do in the Shadows.
Yeah.
No, nah, that's about vampires. That's my bad.
I don't think Thaddeus is a vampire.
Dude, he would be so much cooler if he was a vampire. Bro.
Maybe his wife's a vampire. We don't know.
Dude, bruh.
So we only see her at the dinner feasts.
Yep. Yeah, she's sucking on people's blood and then running away.
Yeah. And so he takes the sword and he just yells like, they're worthless, you know. This is going to be remembered as the most ridiculous decision ever made by an Alethi High Prince.
What a sore winner.
I know, like, right?
You got the blade and you're like, they're worthless, you know.
It's like, Thaddeus, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Just take your win. Take the W and walk away. And Dalinar comes back and he tells Kaladin, get your things, get all the men that you left behind. I'm going to send troops. Leave the bridges. You're not going to need them. And come to my camp. And Kaladin's like, wait, what just happened? And Dalinar says, I don't know what's been done to you, but know this, you will not be bridgemen in my camp, nor will you be slaves. And we get the great exchange where he's like, what's a man's life worth? And Kaladin says, well, the slave masters say about 2 emerald bromes. He's like, well, what do you say? And quoting his father, he says, a life is priceless. And Dalinar says, coincidentally, the exact same value of a shard blade. So you and your men bought me 2,600 priceless lives, and I just had to repay you with one priceless sword. I call that a bargain.
Yeah, it was a really nice moment. There's not a lot of like moments in Brandon's books where I get choked up. I think Sazed seeing Vin die was like one of those moments, but this was one that got me a little choked up, where he's like, you know, a life is priceless. He's like, yeah, and I got 20 however many priceless lives out of that. That was a really, really awesome moment.
Yep. I told you guys, it was one of my favorite chapters, all 3 of these chapters, but there's a reason. And then we end that section with him being like, Kaladin said, I mean, you said you'd take care of Thaddeus. That was what you were planning? He's like, oh, no, that wasn't taking care of Thaddeus. That was taking care of you and your men. I still have work to do.
Just an absolute banger of a line to finish that on. It's like, that wasn't taking care of Thaddeus. That was taking care of you. Like,
oh, my gosh. Brilliant.
Yeah. Fuck yeah,
Dalinar. This guy has so much honor.
This is the guy you guys want to kill before the end of the book. Like,
we don't want him to die.
No one said we want him to die.
That's fair. Just expect him to.
Yeah. He deserves to die, and I hope he burns in hell. No, I don't. I don't feel that way at all.
up until this chapter, like, I'm just like, if I have to pick 2 characters I want to survive this book, it was Dalinar and Taravangian. And now one of those names ain't on that list, so all I've got to cling to is Dalinar.
I thought you were going to say you had to pick 2 Kaladins to survive. I was like, what?
There's
just not enough Kaladins to go around. I don't know. And so we stay with Dalinar. I guess technically that was a Kaladin perspective. We cut back to Dalinar as he goes to see the king. And the king's just, you know, hanging out. He's like, oh, hey, uncle. have you heard those rumors about you and my mom? I mean, I realize nothing could be happening, but I'm growing intolerant of your reputation in camp. What they're saying about you reflects poorly on me. And Downer ignores all of this, just walks up to him, kicks him in the chest, sending him flying across the room, breaking his desk. Because Elokar's wearing his shard plate also. They're both wearing shard plate.
What the fuck was he doing wearing his shard plate in his office? Is this just his paranoia about assassins?
Off. I think that's like...
I think it
yeah,
is, yeah.
I think they made a point of that earlier, that he does not take it off unless he's like asleep.
Oh, okay. I forgot
about
that.
Maybe they didn't say that.
He might try and assassinate himself again.
Yeah. Maybe they didn't say that specifically, but like every single scene he's in, it's not like he's ever on the battlefield except when they're fighting that thing, but every single scene he's in, he has his armor on.
They do mention earlier that he's been wearing it like more and more often.
Okay. I forgot about that. I think I was thinking about the dueling chapter where they say people can rent the king's shard plates. I'm like, all right, well, it's probably just in a closet somewhere. But but no, you're right. Like I think you're right. He might just decide, I'm going to try and assassinate myself again today.
I better have this armor on to stop the bleed.
Yeah. Don't do it, me.
After being kicked through his own desk, he's like, guards! And nobody shows up. And he's like, what's wrong with you? And Downer says absolutely nothing as he proceeds to kick the shit out of Elokar.
Yeah. In this moment, I really thought, did Seth learn how to disguise himself as another guy? I don't understand what's going on.
And this just shows how good Dalinar is, because like the king, you got to figure the king's no slouch in a fight, but it's just like every time he starts to summon his shard blade, Dalinar like kicks him at just the right moment to make him drop it, and it turns back into mist. It happens like 2 or 3 times during this section, and the king can do absolutely nothing against Dalinar, who just like beats the crap out of him until he like the breastplate of his armor explodes.
Considering how restrained Dalinar had to be with Sadeas before, it's nice to see it's like, this is Dalinar who has run out of fucks to give.
Probably true, yep. And apparently without the chest piece, you can't really do much, because that supports like the weight of like the arms and legs and stuff. So Elokar's just lying there after his chest plate explodes, and he's like, guards! It says Elokar squealed, guards. And Dalinar's like, they're not coming. They're my men, and I left them with orders not to enter or let anyone else enter, no matter what they heard. I put them there. They're loyal to me. They always have been. And it's just like, Elokar's nearly weeping. He's like, what are you doing? Please tell me. And Elokar's like, the girth on your horse. You cut it yourself, didn't you? You switched the saddles because it was your favorite saddle and you didn't want to damage it. And Elokar says like, well, someone was trying to kill me and you wouldn't believe me and I was worried it might be you. And Dalinar's like, do you have any idea what you fucking did? You brought suspicion on me from across all the camps. You gave Sadeas the opportunity to destroy me. He didn't place the cracked gemstones in his own shard plate. So he's like, Dalinar's like, yeah, maybe you actually accidentally uncovered something. And then he reaches down to the king's bare chest with his armored hand. And he's like, if I push, you die. Your ribs crack like twigs. Your heart smash like a grape. No one would blame me. They all whisper the Blackthorn should have taken the throne for himself years ago. No one would avenge you. Nobody would care. Which, damn, that's cold.
It's what the king needs to hear.
It's true. I feel like his mom and sister might care, but Dalinar's not actually going to do it, so it doesn't really matter.
Yazda comes back to the Shadow Plains, new ward in tow. It's like, hey guys, what did I miss? Your uncle killed your brother. What?
She's like, another day in my life. For Christ's sake.
And I love that Dalinar goes, do you understand? And Elokar's like, no! I don't understand. And he's like, this is the only way Dalinar could communicate to him that I'm not your enemy. And Elokar's like, wait, you're not going to kill me? Storms, no. I love you like a son, boy. You have very odd paternal instincts.
And you have very odd self-preservation instincts.
Yeah. And so he tells him, like, I've spent all these years doing everything I could to show you that I love you, that I'm loyal to you, that I'm going to do everything for you. And still you suspect me, you screw me over unintentionally, maybe, but now, you know, if I wanted to kill you, you would be dead. So tomorrow you're going to name me High Prince of War. Wait, what? And he tells Elokar what happened with Sadeas. And Olive Elokar's like, well, that's impossible. He's like, no, I mean, really any of the High Princes would have done it if they could get away with it. So you're going to make me High Prince of War, and I'm going to start running this war like a war. I'm going to run this army like an army, and we're going to make a real fight out of this. Do this the way that I think it should be done. And Elokar's like, but the High Princes will revolt. I won't last a week. And he's like, oh, well, you know, they won't be happy, but we'll deal with it. And Elokar says, he says, we're going to make everybody follow the codes. And Elokar's like, but I thought you said it was wrong to force people to do it. And Nalash says, that was before the Almighty lied to me. And what he's realized about Noadon, because when Noadon said that it was a time for the sword in that vision, he was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. Noadon had to establish order by force, like build order out of the remnants of the horrible desolation that happened before he could get people doing the right thing. He says, I've been treating the other high princes like adults. An adult can take a principle and adapt it, but we're not ready for that. We're children. And when you're teaching a child, you require him to do what is right until he grows old enough to make his own decisions. So that's what we're doing. Starting tomorrow, every Light Eyes is a raw recruit, and that's how I'm going to teach him. And Elokar's like, well, assuming I make that proclamation. And Don's like, oh, you will. And in return, I promise to find out who's trying to kill you. And Elokar says, after that announcement, you won't have to. It'll be everybody. It'll be easy to make that list. And Dalinar's like, ah, well, at least we won't have to guess then. Don't be so glum, nephew. You learned something today. Your uncle doesn't want to kill you. And then as Dalinar's leaving, he's like, oh, and Elokar, your mother and I are now courting. You'll want to start growing accustomed to that. And that's the thing that Elokar is most shocked by in this entire thing.
I'm going to bang your mom. Sorry, dude.
Your cousins might be your stepbrothers. Sorry.
Whoops. Yeah. Have fun with that.
I also like that Dalinar opens the door and the guards are out there all nervous about ignoring the king's calls for help. He's like, see, he's fine. And that ends part four. That's a great chapter for ending part four. I loved it.
Yeah.
Every minute of that ride. And we do not have any interludes. But we don't need an interlude to get a Seth chapter, we've discovered, so that works out.
Like, I know you brought it up last time, but still, seeing Wit's name on that page of perspectives is just a, oh, come on, I need it.
Yeah.
Okay. When I heard that, I was like, oh, Dak's going to be so happy.
Yeah, we're going to see. We'll have to see. We've got a few chapters left, so he'll be in one of them, presumably. I mean, it could even be the epilogue, I suppose. Although, maybe the epilogue's not really part of part five, so maybe not.
Yeah, we'll I don't know. I do think it's interesting that there's no Adolin coming up.
Yeah, right? I mean, he could show up in Dalinar's chapter. Or
yeah, Calvin's, yeah.
I suppose.
But, like, we won't see inside his head.
Yeah. So we go to Shallan. There is no epigraph in the part five chapters. Just straight into the chapter. And we come back right where we left Shallan, as you guys pointed out. Like, no time has passed. So how Shallan's and Yasna's story time-wise interacts with... We only saw like one crossover, essentially, which was when Dalinar talked to Yasna over Spanreed. So we have no idea, like, yeah, time-wise when most of this happens.
Do we know how long she was out, like, before she awoke?
I feel like it did say. I feel like it was like a day or two because she was after the poisoning that she wakes up. But I could be wrong. So Shallan's just feeling sorry for herself. Yasna hates her. Cabsol's dead. She's like, why do I feel so bad about that? I mean, yeah, he was an assassin and all that stuff, but he was nice to me. And then she starts thinking about the bread and the jam. And what was up with that? Why didn't the jam save him? And wait a second. Yasna ate the bread. And she has to pull out her sketch pad and draw the scene of Yasna putting the bread in her mouth. And it's not great. It's not perfect because she didn't take a memory at that moment, but she can still get a pretty good drawing done. And she sees, like, as Yasna raises the bread to her mouth, it looks weird. And that's when she figures it out. She doesn't tell us what she's figured out, but she's like, wait, no, it couldn't be. And she gets out of bed and goes to find Yasna, who does not want to see her. But Shallan does not care. She's like, the soul caster you wear is a fake. It was fake the whole time.
Jacques,
exactly. And Yasna's like, oh, yeah, very clever. I keep several decoys. You're not the first one to try to steal it. Of course I keep the real one hidden. And Shallan takes out the picture of Shadesmar with the beads that she'd drawn and shows it to Yasna. And Yasna is shocked to see this. And she says, where did you find that? What book described that scene to you? And Shallan says, no book. I visited that place the night that I accidentally soulcast the goblet in my room into blood. And then covered it up by faking a suicide attempt. And Yasna's like, that's ridiculous. You think I'd believe that? And Shallan goes, there is no Fabriel, is there? There never has been. You just use it to distract people from the fact that you can soulcast on your own. And I did it too. I wasn't touching it, but it didn't matter because it was a fake.
So this makes sense when, because I remember in that flash, the vision that Dalinar had with Noadon, they mentioned soulcasters and make them sound like a group of people rather than an object. I'm like, oh, that tracks.
Yeah, that does make a lot more sense now.
That would make sense. It's a fair point.
Go, Webb, go!
Shallan has put together.
I was thinking of her testing it again. That popped into my head.
Shallan has put together that Yasna thought the jam was poisoned, and so she soul cast it when she pretended to smell it, and that's why she didn't have a reaction to the smell. And I kind of tried to hand it to you guys about that, because as soon as Shallan smells it, she's like, "Oh my gosh, this is disgusting!" And all Yasna did was she like seemed to smell it, and she's like, "Oh." And she didn't say anything. And then later she's like, oh, it's not supposed to smell like that? Well, apparently it smelled like the most disgusting thing ever. And but yeah, no, she soul cast it away. And Yasna is bad at making organic things. So it didn't come out very good. And then as she was eating the bread, she soul cast that into something else also. And that's why it didn't poison her. And Yasna tries to be like, you're just delusional from fatigue and stress. And Shallan's like, fine, I'll show you. And she says in her head, which I don't know we've ever established that you can talk to them in your head. But she says, creatures, can you hear me? And the response says, yes, always, which that's creepy as fuck. Can you return me to that place? And they say, you need to tell me something true. The more true, the stronger our bond. And she says, well, Yasna Soulcaster is fake. That's true. No, something about you. The stronger the truth, the more hidden, the more powerful. And she says that I'm a murderer. I killed my father. And the voice says, ah, powerful truth indeed. And she's back in Shadesmar, slipping beneath the sea of beads, of glass beads. And it's not good. She's like, starts to drown in these beads. She did not think this through. But then she sees Yasna, like, on a raft made of the beads. It says they seem to obey her will.
Well, at least it's not a corpse boat.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, I was thinking step up. We were missing a corpse boat. That's the one thing this scene is missing.
And she pulls Shallan back into the real world and says, idiot girl, you have no idea how dangerous that was, visiting Shadesmar with only one dim sphere. Idiot. And Shallan is like, I want to be part of what's going on. Whatever it is that you're doing, I want in. And Yasna's like, but you stole from me. And Shallan's like, yeah, I'm sorry about that. And I made a mistake. I wasn't gonna steal it. I convinced myself that I couldn't do it until you showed me that truth isn't as simple as I thought it was. And shockingly to me, I feel like Yasna's like, okay, sit down. You will never lie to me again, and you will never steal from me or anyone again. And Shallan promises, and Yasna's like, all right, scoot over here. If you want to be part of this, I want you to read this. It's about the Voidbringers, and that's where we leave off.
Ominous.
Yeah, right? Also very forgiving of Yasna, I feel like.
I don't know. Like, she is very set in her ways. I think that after what we saw before, she really wanted Shallan with her, and she was shattered by the theft, but Shallan has shown like she has the sort of knowledge and the sort of, I don't know if integrity is the right word, but conviction that Yasna prizes. So she, as much as she is bitter over the fact that Shallan stole from her, I think that she was actually looking for an excuse. It's like, how can I let this go? And And Shallan has just basically just prostrated herself in a way that Yasna responds to. And Yasna's like, all right, there's my reason.
Yeah, agreed. I was going to say almost the same thing.
Okay. That and the fact that she can do it, like she can be of help in this situation. It's like she's proven herself by figuring this out. She can do it herself, even though she doesn't, you know all the ins and outs. And I think Shallan also makes the case of, look, if you're not going to let me co-join back with you, I'm still going to try to figure this out on my own.
Right.
So she's like, well, it's probably a better idea that you just stay with me then.
I also think on some level, for Yasna, it will probably be nice to have someone that she can share these things with. because she seems to have been keeping all of this to herself, as far as we know. So that may have played into it. We had to record it in blood, which actually, I think, I don't remember if it was Dak or Joe. Somebody called this pretty much perfectly last time, that Navani would be Injustice. That was kind of obvious because it was the only chapter left. That Sea of Glass would be about Shallan, and maybe she'd go back to that place. And that Recorded in Blood would be about Seth. So I think it was Dak. Did good calls on those.
I think that was, yeah.
And so Seth, Sun Volano, Truthless of Shinovar, is in Carbranth. And apparently he's gotten a job delivering stuff to the palace and has been working at it for a little while to scope things out and to not be suspicious when he goes to kill Taravangian.
Before it said he was there to kill Taravangian, but after it said he was in Carbranth, I was like, oh, fuck, is he after Yasna?
That would have made sense, right?
Yeah. Again, I couldn't see any reason anyone would go after Taravangian, because I'm just like, well, why would anyone hate that guy?
Didn't we know that Taravangian was on the list?
No, I don't think we did. We talked about that it was a possibility, like, multiple times, but I don't think we knew.
He mentioned the King of Yarkaved on that list when he first got it, but I don't think he mentioned the King of Carbranth.
That was the only king.
He didn't read out the entire list.
No. He mentioned, he's like, there's like a Sele Gerontarch, there's several High Princes, and the King of Yarkaved? Like, that was those were the ones that he called out.
Yeah, I don't, like, when I was listening to this, I didn't feel surprised. I was like, well, you've already gone after another king. Makes sense to go after another king. Don't know why, but obviously I didn't think Yasna was in danger for any second. I did think they were uncomfortably close to Seth, but when he said Taravangian, I was like, okay, yep. There's a lot of important people on that list. Checks out.
That is true. What if Yasna knew that, like, the person who assassinated her dad was in the city? So Seth is, thinking about how Taravangian is supposed to be not that smart. He's kind of pissed off. Taravangian is too dumb to plan for me killing him. Seth does not want to do this. He wants somebody to stop him, but he can't let it happen. So it's their fault for not being good enough to stop him. But he has explicit instructions that he's not to assassinate Taravangian until he's said, the others are dead, I've come to finish the job, and Taravangian has to hear and acknowledge that. Which, as Dak pointed out, is a big departure from the other ones, so it's kind of a red flag.
Although if you put your own name on a hit list, that's a nice little failsafe there, isn't it?
Right? Even Seth is like, why is this one so different? But we find out, yeah. That's how you don't get accidentally murdered by your own order.
Thank God Seth isn't too trigger happy, because if Taravantian's acknowledgement was yes, but, and then the sword's already through his neck.
Fair point. Yeah. And so Seth knows that King Taravangian has a strict schedule and he'll be alone in private reflection at this particular time, guarded by only two soldiers. So he walks up to these guys and one of them holds out his hand and Seth breaks the guy's wrist and smashes his elbow into the guy's face and then kicks the other guy in the stomach and bashes his head into the floor and they're done. He kicks open the door and he's like, I've been instructed to tell you the others are dead. I've come to finish the job. Did you hear me? And Taravangian says, did you kill my guard, Seth, Sun Volano? Volano. We get some interesting stuff from the king here. Leaders dead, lives lost. Was this your destiny, do you wonder? Given that monstrosity of a shard blade by your people, cast out and absolved of any sins. He's like, oh no, I'm not absolved. Common mistake. The sins are still on me. And it's actually an interesting, people think Taravangian's kind of slow. We've seen that with Shallan. And clearly the implication here is that that is not the case. And Seth even thinks, like, this guy is no simpleton. And before the king even, like, the king starts to pull out this rock, but Seth figures it out before it's even fully out. He's like, this is the guy. This is my secret master. Secret bad guy. There were many, many talks on the Discord about, like, this would be the one secret bad guy you guys would never see coming. And it seems like they were right.
Yeah, you got us.
Correct.
And Seth goes, wait, you put your own name on the list? He's like, yeah, best defense against if something happened to you, people found the list, I would not be suspected. And Seth's like, why? Why would you do this? For vengeance? And Taravangian's like, no, some of the men you killed were my dear friends, Seth, Sun Volano. And Seth goes, well, then why? Taravangian says, stability. Those you killed were among the most powerful and influential men on Roshar. So it's like, wait, so how does that help stability? And Teravangi says, sometimes you must tear down a structure to build a new one with stronger walls. And we're going to need strong walls in the coming years. Very, very strong walls. It sounds like Teravangian is working some sort of plan.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got something in the works, but like, what? Like, again, you know, I talked about like predicting the future, whatever, but to what end?
Mm-hmm. And he says that we're going to need very strong walls in the coming years. So he anticipates maybe through these like death, whatever, that something is coming, and his plan for defending against it involves killing a whole lot of very powerful people. How that works, who knows? Like, it does seem like a weird way to go about it, but maybe we'll find out more. And then he's like, come with me. And he leads Seth through a secret passage. And he takes
Welcome
him
to my evil lair.
Well, kinda, yeah. He takes him to a room painted white filled with hundreds and hundreds of beds. And Seth is like, wait, you brought me to a hospital? You expect your humanitarian efforts to impress me? And Terrange is like, oh, no, no, this is not humanitarian. And Seth sees that the healers working on the people here are draining their blood.
Mm. Don't you love that?
And Seth's like, wait, you're killing them. He's like, yeah, we don't need the blood. It's just a way to kill slowly and easily. We try to select only the worst cases to move here, because once they're brought here, we cannot let them leave if they begin to recover. And sometimes there's not enough terminally sick people around. So then we just get like people off the street who won't be missed.
Yeah, you know, that's completely cool and normal.
That's where this takes like the worst of the turns, I feel like, is you're like, if you could use people who are going to die anyway and like give them a good death or an easier death and then get something out of it, maybe you could justify it. But then he's like, yeah, but sometimes we just have to go grab people and kill them.
Also, doesn't it say he bleeds them slowly? Like, that doesn't sound like a great death.
Yeah, he says slow. That's the way to kill slowly and easily. I don't know if that means easy for them or easy for the people dying. That's a fair point.
I assume he needs it to be slow enough that they can see whatever they need to see and then say whatever they need to say about it.
And Seth sees people die right in front of him. Two of the ones left are children. He wants to stop it, but Teravangian orders him to stay still, and it's horrifying. And Seth's like, but why? And then the boy who he sees cries out, the day was ours, but they took it. Stormfather, you cannot have it. The day is ours. They come rasping, and the lights fail. Oh, Stormfather. And then the kid dies. And the king says, it's better for one man to sin than for a people to be destroyed, wouldn't you say? We don't know why some speak when others don't. The dying see something. It began about the same time King Gavilar was investigating the Shattered Plains for the first time. It is coming, and these people see it. Their words might save us. And Seth goes, you're a monster. And he's like, yes, but I'm a monster who will save this world. I have a new name for your list. I cannot let him seize control. It will undermine everything. He wants Seth to kill Dalinar Kholin. And I'm afraid it must be done quickly before he can unite the High Princes. It must be done brutally, I'm afraid. And Seth says, I've rarely had the luxury of working otherwise. And the chapter ends with the screams greeted him, which I hadn't talked about, but he's hearing the screams of the people that he's killed in his head this whole time. It's kind of horrific. And that's the end of our section. So, yeah, for the next time, we're going to read through the end of the book. And I guess before we get into predicaments, I will once again give you guys the chapter names just that you can try to incorporate. Chapter 72 is called Veristitalion. Chapter 73 is called Trust. Chapter 74 is called Ghost Blood. Chapter 75 is called In the Top Room. And the epilogue has a title also. It's called Of Most Worth. So there you go. Predicaments, what do you guys think? Where are we going? What is going to happen either before the end of this book or as we get into more Stormlight later?
Oh, boy. I don't have very much solid this week, but looking forward to Shallan and Yasna working together. I'm hoping that they will maybe start making their way back to like Alethkar. I'd like to see them with other characters, but it's not obviously going to happen in this book.
maybe they'll be on to Taravangian there. Maybe some of Yasna's research will sort of cross over a little bit at some point. I'm not seeing how that will be like exactly happening, but I feel like someone's going to have to start realizing people are missing at some point. I realize that the whole point of them taking people who aren't going to be missed kind of gets away from that, but surely if they're getting this many people dying, like they've got capacity to hold a lot of people at a time, someone's going to notice at some point a whole bunch of people just go missing, surely. Back at the Shattered Plains, I think Dalinar's probably going to get a good start on his plan. I don't know how Sadeas is going to react. I think I keep seeing, you know, Gollum finally having the ring as Sadeas with his shard blade. So I feel like he's going to be in his own little world for a little bit. Kaladin, I imagine, is going to be somewhere like reasonably high up, possibly whether he's in the army or a bit of an advisor. We already know Dalinar's got questions for him, so I hope we see that play out before the end of the book. Regarding Seth and having Dalinar on the list, I don't think that'll play out this book. I think it's a next book thing. I think I would still be pretty sad to see Seth assassinate Dalinar. I'd rather think that Dalinar effectively will become the leader, if not the king, obviously, but definitely sort of controlling that army to then kind of go head-to-head with Taravangian at some point, whether it's the next book, possibly even much later. Depends on how big bad Taravangian's actually going to end up being. Yeah, I don't know. I've just got so many thoughts happening at the moment. With the chapter titles, no idea. It's too much that could happen or not happen to put different things in there. Whatever chapter we do get, I'm very much looking forward to like Wit's chapter. I feel like he's probably in a good spot for the epilogue, but it would be cool to get another chapter of him. I don't know how he would just come back just casually in. I don't know how that would work out, but however it happens, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. I feel like you're probably not alone on that one. I think everyone is like, ooh, the Wit chapter. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, that or it'll be like he's actually got nothing to do with what's currently going on. He's off exploring something, and it'll be a nice little teaser for the next book or something.
Oh, yeah, I can see that. It'd be like we didn't get any interludes here, but Wit could be an interlude all by himself.
He could be. Maybe he meets Shallan in Shadesmar.
Oh, well, he's riding his corpse boat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Corpse boat meets glass boat. Could work.
You make a good point about, like, if there's hundreds of people disappearing, somebody should probably notice. But then again, if they do notice people in Carbranth disappearing, who does they get reported to? Well, the king, probably.
Yeah, who can quite easily do nothing about that.
Yeah. So, who knows? But, okay, yeah, that logical. And I don't blame you for not having anything for the chapter titles, because it's a lot that we've had to take in just now.
Yes.
Yeah, chapter titles, I've got nothing. I don't know who or what any of those will apply to, although I am fascinated that one of them is called Ghost Blood. I can't wait to see where that goes.
That's true.
But no, so I've mentioned before, like, my prediction is it's based around the fact that Taravangian has sent Seth to kill Dalinar. Because, like, he's come around and said it, like, I don't know if it's going to work. They say, oh, you know, send Seth to kill someone, like, it's kind of his whole thing, and we've seen the whole book, he's pretty much unstoppable. So it's like, on the one hand, now that you've said it, it might not come true. On the other hand, it's Seth. Like, okay. So I've tried to run down the list of possibilities, and I've come down to three. Possibility one, Dalinar does die. The fight will be tense enough, it'll look like he'll still make it out alive, and there might be the moment where he stops Seth, but he dies, and Kaladin's hopes die with him. Kaladin has to work with Aelin and Renarin, and they're not quite as trusting of him, so that'd be a heavy wrinkle for book two. Option two, instead of Dalinar dying, one of his sons takes the bullet for him, either Aelin or Renarin, don't know which one. Or option three, and I think this one might be the most likely, just given how Seth is reacting to everything that's going on, Like, there was that moment in the hospital where Seth was like, oh, God, I've got to stop this. And he starts going for one, like, to save one of the kids who's being bled out. But Taravane is like, get back here. I think Seth's moments might have been building towards, at the very end of it, he will finally just go, no, this is wrong. And he disobeys.
Mm.
And maybe that causes such like a massive fracture of his mind that he winds up killing himself instead. Because that's one of the two big things that he couldn't do. He couldn't kill himself and he couldn't give up his shard blade. Yep. So maybe he just like, he breaks the rule, he disobeys his master. And so he's done with it and he commits seppuku or something. I think option three is probably the most likely of those. Now, the roll-on effect of all this will be Dalinar's trying to avoid a civil war. And this, because like Taravane said, this has to be done brutally. It's all just going to blow up because the assassin in white comes after Dalinar so soon after there are suspicions among people that Sadeas tried to have him killed. So basically they'll let the army was split down the middle. People who follow Dalinar and say, Sadeas sent the assassin. He probably sent the assassin to kill Gavilar as well.
Mm.
Just because it's the same dude.
Right.
And then on the other side of it, you'll have Sadeas and all these people just going, it was the assassin in white. The Parshendi must have come for him. And Dalinar will, like, I think he would suspect that Sadeas is actually innocent of this one, especially after he heard that Parshendi on the battlefield go, it's you. I finally found you. And like, maybe he just goes, wow, maybe they actually did. But because it's so soon after Sadeas tried to have him killed, like Adolin and Renner and Navani are all just like, okay, do not start with that trust Sadeas bullshit now. We've already seen where that leads. And yep. So Dalinar just kind of has to go along with it.
Interesting. You've painted okay. I can see how your possibility number three lines up. Or actually, I guess that would even work with two. If one of his sons gets killed by the assassin in white, you could still have the same.
It could even work with option one, aside from the fact that Dalinar, like the whole thing about Dalinar suspecting it. Like, I think, like, aside from that, the roll-on effect about the civil war goes with all three of them.
Which, I mean, that seems to, I don't know if civil war exactly is Taravangian's goal, but he doesn't want Dalinar to unite the High Princes. So if that's what happens, whether or not the assassin succeeds in killing Dalinar, Taravangian will have gotten what he wanted.
Yeah.
Which presumably we don't want. I mean, he says that he's doing all of this to save the world. So
I don't know how I can trust that at this point.
Fair point, yeah.
Need more information.
But yeah, no, that's some interesting predigging. I like this. You may have just set up our whole story for the next book. Because if the fight doesn't happen by the end of this book, it could be like the beginning of the next book, and that could be what sets us in a whole new direction for that book.
Possibly. I feel like if it does end with like Seth killing himself, it'll be the end of this book, because that brings Seth's character arc full circle within one book, rather than just like,
that's true.
Let's conclude Seth's character arc at the start of another book. I don't know if that that works, but whatever. Maybe it does. I don't know.
I mean, the way he's sort of been like the side main character, or maybe he's like a recurring supporting character this whole book, where we only saw him in like the prologue and then in the interludes until now. It might go with that, actually, where he's never like a primary main chapter character. He begins and ends on like the fringes.
Yeah, possibly. We'll see.
But given how much you liked Seth, I think that you might prefer if he did not do that and he did become more of a main character.
I don't know at this point. I just need to see where everything winds up.
Yeah, fair enough.
Ooh, maybe. Sorry, I've got another prediction. He's expecting to see Dalinar in Shardplate, but if Dalinar gives away his Shardplate to Renarin, maybe he gets Renarin.
Ooh, that'd be sad.
To Tom's. Yeah, I don't want Renarin to die, but
yeah, it's possible. It's a good thought.
I mean, that sort of ties it into like the opening chapter where, well, so I was thinking like the opening chapter where he goes after Gavilar, and Gavilar was in the plate posing as the bodyguard, and Was it Sadeas? I think they said it was Sadeas who was in the...
Yeah, Sadeas was the decoy pretending to be the king leaving.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Got him again.
That really would be they love... We've established they love... what do you call it? The same forward and back... No, I mean the
symmetry.
Symmetry is the word I'm looking for, yes. That would be weirdly symmetrical that if that was to happen at the end of this book.
I like some of the stuff you guys said. I the only chapter title I can remember kind of latching onto when Data said it was Ghostblood. I think that'll be our Wit perspective, because we know the Ghostbloods were looking for Wit, and so maybe we get that Wit perspective of him meeting up with them in the book. So like we're gonna get some Ghostbloods meeting with Hoid. That would make sense, you know, for it to be titled that, because none of our other characters have had interactions, besides the interlude characters, have had interactions or know about the Ghostbloods. So to me, it would make sense for that to be Wit / Hoid.
Well, Amaram, at least, I mean, he's not one of our main characters, but he knew about the Ghostbloods and Kaladin heard him mention them. So
yeah, that's true, which is weird. I don't know how well they're known on this planet. It's kind of a strange thing. Although, you know, maybe the Ghostbloods are a thing on Roshar outside of Kelsier, maybe not.
It could be like a whole different.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know how likely that is, but like it could be a whole thing that he just kind of borrowed the name of, kind of how he like borrowed the name of the Lord Ruler in.
He was Gadriel,
the Sovereign. But people thought, you know, it was Lord Ruler or whatever.
Have been like an existing organization that he took over somehow.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Because, you know, he likes to usurp people, sure.
Daimu reports back in after searching for Hoid and is like, hey, so we ran into trouble with this group called the Ghostbloods, and Kelsey's gone, ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, that's a cool name. I want to check that out.
That's my name now. We're using them. I'm Ghostblood. Ghostblood Kelsier. So, that, you know, that could be that's tertiary, like, predicament. I don't really know how much I like that one, but the Wit meeting Ghostbloods thing, that's my theory for that chapter anyway. I really don't see how we would get the conclusion of Seth and Dalinar in this book. I really just don't think that it's going to happen. I think what we have already seen is the climax. The climax was Dalinar and Seth and Kaladin, or excuse me, Dalinar and Sidaeus and Kaladin all colliding at the battle. Dalinar confronting Sidaeus, Dalinar taking control from El-Hokar, essentially, and then the Shallan revelation with Yasna, the Teravangian revelation. I think that is all the climax of this book. If there's extra stuff going on outside of these chapters, like going forward, I just don't see. I don't know. I feel like there's not much else to be revealed at this point, except maybe the Wit Ghostblood stuff, right? So like if that happens, if that's a thing, then that could be the last kind of little like revelation here. But I don't know. So I think we're kind of done with like the main story though at this point. I think the rest of this is going to kind of be more like wrap up stuff or set up stuff for next book. And I think the next book is where we're actually going to see the Seth stuff come into play. Thinking about that, the next book is called, Words of Radiance. And so obviously at this point we kind of have an understanding of like at least I feel like we do that words of Radiance have to be the words of the Night of Radiant, which are like the words that Kaladin spoke somehow already knowing them. Like that's got to be what Words of Radiance is in reference to. That being said, I think that this book is going to focus more on Kaladin learning how to use that power. So as taking that even further, Kaladin's now with Dalinar. So Seth knows how to use Stormlight. Kaladin, I think, is going to learn how to use Stormlight. So I think if you're going to find a defender of Dalinar colon against Seth, it's going to end up being Kaladin, because they've got the same. I know that Seth has the Shardblade, but Kaladin has already proven more than once that he doesn't need a Shardblade to defeat a Shardblade. And so I think that this next book may be focusing on Kaladin learning that, and that maybe the climax, maybe even the climax in the next book. I don't know that it's the climax. Could happen earlier in the book, could happen late in the book. Maybe the climax of the next book is Seth and Kaladin fighting. Seth trying to kill Dalinar colon, Kaladin defending Dalinar colon. That is what I think that is all heading towards for that piece anyway. What's going to happen with Teravangian? I mean, I don't know. That's and are Shallan and Yasna going to come to the Shattered Plains again? I don't know. I mean, it would be cool if all of our main characters collided at some point, but we're about to be done with book one, and you know, there's about to be five of these. There's already four, so like we don't really know when in the timeline these things are going to take place, because there's so much more we don't have. We have way less information than there is information to be had at this point. So yeah, but that's my kind of predicament for maybe the end of the book is going to be more wrap up, and then the real exciting stuff with what we've kind of set up for at this point is going to be more in the next book.
That makes a kind of sense, at least. Like if basically the end of chapter four, maybe the very or part four, the very beginning of part five is like the high point, and then we're wrapping up. It's kind of like a downslope of like calming things back down a little bit. That would I feel like structurally that would probably make sense, as opposed to continue ramping up until we get to the end and then cut off. But it could go either way. I feel like we've seen both of these things in Brynn's.
You're definitely right. I mean, what is it? I think Mistborn is until like the final chapter in the epilogue, it's ramping up the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right.
Is the final chapter of the book she kills it? She kills the Lord Ruler? Well, and then the rest is epilogue? It's like your favorite book. I thought you'd just know.
I don't remember the chapter differences as well. Let's see.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
She kills him in the last chapter at the very end of the last chapter is her stabbing him through the heart.
Yeah, I think we talked about that because we hadn't had, you know, any experience with Brandon's endings at that point. That like we all said, wow, it was really abrupt.
Yeah. Yep. So this one could be the same. Fair point. Yeah,
could be.
We'll see. I mean, he's also grown as a writer since then, before he wrote this one. So he's gotten several other books out. So maybe that was growing pains. Because I think that we also, Warbreaker, also you guys felt ended real abruptly.
Didn't end. It got cut off. I'll die on that hill.
Okay. Okay. But yeah, that some solid thoughts there. But I really don't have that many comments to make on Joe's. He just had some really solid stuff that he's thinking.
That means it's right.
Maybe.
He can't say anything because he knows that's what's going to happen. Nah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So for next time, like I said, we're going to read through the end. I said it's four chapters in an epilogue, but actually there's also an end note that takes up about one page that you guys can read. And then the Ars Arcanum, which discusses some Fabrials and some lashing stuff. We will probably also touch on at least slightly. So just read all the way through. I'm going to go ahead and make the announcement now of what we're going to read next, so that people are prepared for after next week.
Oh.
So after we finish this book next week, we are going to take a short break, a one episode break from Stormlight, and we're going to jump back into Arcanum Unbounded to read, I think, the last non-Stormlight thing that we have in there. And so you guys will be going to Arcanum Unbounded, and you'll start with the essay called The Threnodyte System, and then you'll read the short story Shadows for Silence in the Forests of Hell. And so that's what we're doing after this. And it's funny, the whole reason that I originally, when I set up the order that we're going to read all this in, the reason that I kept that where it is, first off, I thought maybe we'll want a little bit of a breather after the first Stormlight book. But mainly it was the fact that the essay, the Threnodyte System essay, mentions the name Odium. And I was like, oh, well, I want them to have had the experience of like discovering this name in the Way of Kings before we throw it at them. I know we ended up reading The Lost Metal and it was in there, so it didn't really matter. But that's why it was originally placed where it is. So yes, after next time, we're going to finish out this book, and after that, we're going to go and read The Threnodyte System essay and Shadows for Silence. So everyone out there who's following along, we're going to juke a little bit, and we're going to read that whole thing in one episode, because much like Sixth of the Dusk, it is not subdivided into chapters. It is close to the same length as Sixth of the Dusk. I think Sixth maybe just slightly longer. So it'll be a little longer than what we generally read in one go, but it's not subdivided, so we don't really have an option unless I want to dig in and be like, when you read the sentence, blah, 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 stop reading, which seems like a that's just asking for trouble. We're not going to do that.
That would be a pain in the ass.
Yeah, exactly. So yes, that's where we're going after this. There was, before we get into our normal wrap-up stuff, there's one more thing that came out recently. Brandon was at a convention, and I read the Q&A from the convention, and there's a bunch of stuff in there that I won't say anything about to you guys because it would be spoilery. But one interesting thing that I thought you guys might be interested in is somebody asked him about, after we've established that the next Mistborn trilogy is going to be like kind of 1980s level of technology, and it's going to be called, like, the name for the era will be like the Ghostbloods. So we think that'll be real important there. He talked in the past about potentially doing, because originally it was a trilogy of trilogies. It was high fantasy, urban fantasy taking place in kind of a modern, and then like the space age. And I've told you guys about that before. He put in the Wax and Wayne books almost accidentally in between the first two. And then and he sometimes refers to that as like the steampunk setting. I don't really feel like it's very steampunky. There's not really steam for one thing, except for trains. But anyway, so now we have like high fantasy, we have like a steampunk, we're going to have the modern day urban fantasy. And he talked about doing like a, between the urban fantasy and the sci-fi, another set of books that he said would be like a cyberpunk sort of thing. And he basically confirmed at the convention that yes, he's pretty much intending to write that now. He can't, like, he's not exactly going to promise for sure, because you never know what happens, but basically it's in his head. He's going to write it, is his plan. So there will be another Mistborn set. And if he writes three books in all three of the next sets of Mistborn eras, there'll be like 16 Mistborn books total. So that would be weirdly appropriate as well.
No. It's going to go either original trilogy, three books, Wax and Wayne, four, contemporary-ish, one, three, then four, then three. Or it'll go three, four, five, six, seven books.
I wouldn't be completely shocked by that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I thought you guys might be interested that we're going to get like a cyberpunk era of Mistborn also.
Interesting. I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Might be interesting.
How cyberpunky it will be, given that the steampunk era wasn't really steampunky, but we'll see.
I'm sort of picturing Blade Runner, but with Mistborn powers.
Mm. Right. Yeah. That's what I think of when.
Yeah, I honestly thought that maybe he would make his 80s style kind of that way, like maybe like a real Dark Knight Returns type of vibe from like the comics.
That could be cool, yeah.
Where it was like 80s, but it was like super gritty and like almost like cyberpunky in its like a lot of kind of weird, almost like British punk like aesthetic.
Okay, let's get into, we have some emails. I don't think we have any new reviews or patrons. We did get one message on Discord that I wanted to read because it was specifically sent for, it says, for after the Dalinar trades his priceless sword scene. So this one is from Matthias, and Matthias says, hello, Data, Joe, Deck, and Jamie. Just a quick note to say how much I've enjoyed your thoughts on The Way of Kings. I'm sure by this point you've all stated your extensive thoughts on Sadeas and his betrayal. Perhaps you can see now why the fandom loves Dalinar so much. Like, way too much. A concerning amount, actually. Anyway, I'm looking forward to your thoughts on Words of Radiance, Wasn't to the Time of Next, Colo, P.S. Fasher, and then a crab emoji at the... I don't know why necessarily that needed to be after the priceless sword scene, but I guess the Sadeas betrayal. But anyway.
I think that's because it shows how far Dalinar is willing to go for his people.
Yeah.
Like,
you're right.
It's like, yeah, I can, like I said, with that one act, he just proved, yes, he is worthy of, like, the respect and loyalty of all his people.
Yeah, I think we kind of all agreed that, like, at the end of that section, it's just like, oh, this is Dalinar. This is, like, top shelf Dalinar right here.
Also, it's nice to have, like, a fan favorite character that I'm also like a massive fan of, as opposed to Wayne and apparently Moash from that one email we got where these people seem to love these people and come at me for hating them.
And we didn't have much Moash hate this episode.
Yeah.
There's still an opening for Moash to kill Dalinar before the end of the book.
Yeah, so we didn't have much Moash hate. There wasn't much Moash.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about people coming at some one of us for hating people.
Yeah. Yeah. True. You are the OG on that.
Yeah. OG.
Yes. Joe Spook hate.
Classic.
It did do my heart good to like, when we were at the con a couple years ago, I mentioned that I hated Spook because we had the buttons, you know, and the girl's like, can I have one of those? I hate him too.
Hey,
he's the worst. Yeah.
Okay, let's. We got several emails. I don't know that we'll read all of them. One of them is saved to the end of Way of Kings. We'll do that one next time. Well, here, actually, this one is real appropriate. This one is from Ryan. This fits really well here. It says, hey, Jamie, Dak, Joe, and Data. I've really enjoyed listening to your reactions and thoughts on the Way of Kings so far. I can't wait to hear your reaction to Sadeas' betrayal and Kaladin swearing his second oath. I wanted to tell Dak he's not alone. I hate Moash, too.
Hey, my people.
There you go. I emailed last summer. I was the one who binged the podcast like crazy, and I've continued to listen every week once I caught up. Also, Joe, thanks for giving me the slider power last year. It's one of my favorites. Wasn't to the time Word. Of next. Colo, PS Fasher, Crabs Ahoy. From Ryan. Nice. There you go. Ryan supports the Moash 8.
Awesome. Cool. At least I'm not alone.
We dig you, Ryan.
The next one is from Jamie.
Is this another Jamie, or is this the same Jamie that wrote in before?
I think it's another one. They don't mention being the same Jamie from before.
Love
it. It's spelled the same way. Oh, no, it is. It's the same one because it's SW Pants. Yeah, okay. I just saw that in here. So, yes, it is. They just didn't mention that. Hey, I just emailed. So it says, update, up to date. Oh, I should have taken that from the title saying update. I didn't think about it. Hello, Sander Lance crew. I started your podcast February 17th and finished April 28th, just in time for episode 192 to drop. It only took me so long because I had some audiobooks from the library and dissertation work on weekends that took up my time.
While I appreciate your dedication to us, which we do not deserve. Whoa.
Yeah.
What he said.
I don't listen to many podcasts, but you are now my favorite. And that includes the one I often watch live and contribute to. I love the commentaries, even when predicaments are wrong, and the amount of details Jamie, Dak, and Joe pick up on. I love how great a job Data does monitoring the conversation and preventing spoilers from leaking through as best he can. And when he doesn't, the others don't even recognize it. So it's like an Easter egg for those in the know. I also appreciate the fact that you don't have ads. Anyway, not looking forward to the end of the info dump I've been thoroughly enjoying for the past 2.5 months, but it's nice to be caught up. And then Jamie has a thought on one of a Miracle of Sound song and a book that it might go with. And I will say I had not put those two together, but I will consider that. And I have not already picked a song for that particular book. So, I mean, Frugal Wizard is the book that Jamie's talking about. And that's so far down the line for us because it's non-Cosmere that I haven't put much thought into that. I have a few on my list where as I was listening to songs, one just jumps out and it goes, oh, this is for that book. Even though it wasn't Cosmere, it's not until way later. I'm like, I'm writing this down right now. But I haven't the ones that didn't immediately jump out to me, I haven't put much work into figuring out yet.
You have to tell us. Your Shadows of Silence song soon. I'll put it on my playlist.
Yeah. That one I've had picked out for a long time. I think that's one of the ones that did jump out at me and was like, this will work perfectly there. So we'll get that to you. Maybe next time. Maybe when we actually do the episode. We'll see.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the end of Jamie's. Thank you, Jamie, for your update. It's amazing, the catch up, but good on you. Glad you enjoyed it. Our next email is from Rabique. Who says some random thoughts, and going through this, some of the random thoughts are going to be perfectly appropriate for y'all, and some of them are going to be kind of spoilery, and I may kind of censor out some things as we go. But Rubik says, hello, I've been listening since December 2023 and I just caught up, which I'm very sad about since I have to find a new podcast to binge while I work and run. I've wanted to email about various topics but never got around to it, so I figured now would be a good time to put all my thoughts in one email. You absolutely don't have to read the entire thing if it's too long. Bullet point one. Data mentioned at one point that installing a bidet sounded difficult because of the plumbing work needed. I would just like to let you know that I recently installed a bidet myself with no prior plumbing experience, and it was extremely easy. Just wanted to let you know in case the perceived difficulty was preventing you from getting one.
Okay. I think the difficulty for us is that most of our types of bathrooms aren't spaced out for one.
Well, yeah, and you can buy ones that you basically stick on the toilet seat or incorporate into the toilet somehow, but that's, yeah, I don't know.
I would just say, like, the cost of buying one in and of itself is one of the biggest prohibitive factors.
Fair point.
But, you know, power to you if you're installing with no plumbing experience. That's a big thing. Good on you.
Yeah, good on you indeed. Bullet point two says, I concur with Dak and Jamie that Come From Away is an amazing musical, and I highly encourage Data and Joe to watch it if you haven't already.
Fuck yeah, this guy knows what's up. Pretty sure it's on Apple TV. They did a pro shot of the stage
performance. Oh, interesting.
It was on Apple TV. I don't know if it's still there.
I had free Apple TV for like 3 months after I bought my new iPhone, but I don't anymore.
Yeah. I want to finish Ted Lasso, but we don't have Apple TV.
Next bullet point. Speaking of musicals, every time y'all mention bread and jam, which is quite often due to our lovely friend Capsule, this clip from The Sound of Music gets stuck in my head, and it's like the Do-Re-Mi thing.
Oh, good God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tea, a drink with jam and bread. You legend. Yep.
Capsule was in The Sound of Music the whole time.
Oh, no.
Did one of the boys grow up to become Capsule?
Yep, there you go. I'm going to skip a couple that are spoilery. Y'all have mentioned dinosaur. Y'all haven't mentioned Dinosaur Erotica in a while. So if this is upsetting,
there's a reason for that.
You don't need to tell him this. In episode 107, Joe says verbatim, "I want Kolos riding brontosauruses." So he wants Kolos Dinosaur Erotica.
I'll get the fuck out. Get the fuck out.
You were so high up, and then you said that.
You were a legend, and then you fell right down.
Yeah.
The next one, I don't understand this, but I'm going to read it in case one of you guys might understand what this is about. It says, who are, in quotes, mom and fajita? Fajita? Fajita. I'm assuming fajita is not spelled like fajita the food, but I can't think of another way to spell it. At first, I thought mom was your actual mother, but some of the things you say about her makes me think she's not.
Talking about mom from Futurama?
Futurama?
Futurama, yeah.
Could be Futurama mom. I don't know.
Where Vegeta's meant to be.
Vegeta from Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah, I think maybe they're talking about, I may have made the Family Guy reference 10,000 chicken vaginas at one point.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe? I thought that Joe and I had just said mean stuff about our mom, and this person's like, why would you, that's not your real mom, is it? But yeah, I'm sorry, Rubik. I cannot answer your question because I don't know what your question is.
But yeah, I mean, we do talk about mom for Futurama sometimes. Put a bastard in it, you crap.
Shove up. Yeah, okay. So anyway, that's it for now. Data, you do such an amazing job leading the three of them in their first Cosmere experience. They have each been my favorite newbie at some point in the podcast. Currently, Dak is my favorite, but Jamie and Joe are also amazing. Sorry for the super long email. Thanks so much for y'all's hard work. P.S. Now that I can't binge this podcast anymore, do you have recommendations of other great Cosmere podcasts? Well, they don't because they're not allowed to listen to any other ones. Yep.
That's all on you.
I mean, I've been listening to Always Another Podcast, which is fun. I listened to Following Noadon for a good long while. That was one that I binged really quickly and annoyed some other people who had to ride in my car because I was listening to it and then occasionally complaining about it. I've heard Stormpod is really good. I only listened to like one episode of them. Their format I did not like quite as much, but a lot of people really love them. There's some more in-depth ones that like go into, that don't do, you know, the same thing that we're doing, but are like talking about everything at the same time, you know, full spoiler, discussing like deep theories and stuff. Like Shardcast is probably the biggest one of those. Or the Sandersonian Institute of Cosmere Studies. I think that's the name of that one. It's something along those lines. So there's a bunch out there. I don't listen to all of them. I just, listening to podcasts is a little tough for me. It's just like I can't listen to audiobooks. I often find myself having to like rewind a podcast 5 minutes because I got distracted and stopped paying attention. So it's not a thing I do like as much as as some people do. But thank you, Rabik. That was some interesting. That was a roller coaster for the crew as they loved some of these things and then did not.
A wild ride. We were elated. Yep. We were horrified. We were confused at various points.
We've got two left. I think
we laughed. We cried. We got drunk.
So, if anyone would like to send us an email, the address is thesanderlanch@gmail.com. Find us on Instagram and X and Facebook and Patreon, where I still have not been uploading new stuff. I'm sorry to all of our patrons. I did warn you guys all the way back at the beginning that there would be periods between new books where there wouldn't be a whole lot of, at least I didn't already have a whole lot of content planned. So I'm hoping that no one is outraged by the fact that it's been like 3 or 4 weeks now that since something new went up. But I just have not had time to start on what I want to read next, sadly. So at least not in a way where I can record myself reading it, which means that I can't start on Sanderson stuff because I have to record that when I'm reading. So anyway, I am looking to start reading, hopefully this week, something new. But I know that it has been a while, so I'm sorry to everyone who's waiting for that stuff. If you're interested in checking out our Patreon, where there's a fair amount of content of me reacting to stuff as I read it for the first time, along with a couple other things, you can find us on Patreon at the Sander. It's the Sanderlanch. podcast. I believe it's patreon.com/thesanderlanch, kind of like our email addresses. So you can find us there if you want to check that out. If you join our Patreon, Joe will assign you a fairing power. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, Joe will give you a misting power. So check out those things if you're interested in that sort of thing.
Yeah, I don't remember how I got that job, but I'm doing it.
Yeah, I don't remember how it ended up being you necessarily either, but that's what it is.
I think I was the one who suggested, like, if you leave us a 5-star review, we'll do something.
Yeah, that sounds right. It's just, you know, we come across these things organically, and then they just become part of the thing. Like, when I couldn't talk that one time, and I tried to say predictions and something else at the same time and said predicaments, and then it just became the thing. So,
that's the best kind of thing. Organic.
That's where the possum hunters came from as well. So, you know, it's what happens.
Silliness.
Yep.
So, for next time, remember, if everyone who's following along, we are finishing the book and then moving on after that to Shadows for Silence. If you're reading with us, make sure you've got you dig out your copy of Arcanum Unbounded. So that's 4 chapters and an epilogue and a little bit extra for next time. Music by Miracle of Sound. And wasing to the time of next. Colo, P.S. Fasher. Crab Act. Ghost of the